glad that you are with us on this Thanksgiving weekend. We are playing back some of our favorite moments, highlights, best ofs from the last couple of months. You know, so we can get a couple of days off with the family. And because the Seahawks have a Monday night football game, it means that I get Sunday off, too. So it's a full four-day weekend. And on Monday, by the way, we will be doing our show live from the CenturyLink Field Event Center from noon till 2. And then at 2 o'clock, I will shift into our Seahawks pregame coverage. And that is going to be a huge game for the Seahawks. Monday night, the Minnesota Vikings have an 8-3 record, and they're playing about as well as any team in the NFL, as are the Seahawks. And so you match up those two teams on Monday Night Football, and that's going to be fantastic. So that'll be our schedule when we are back on the air live on Monday. The Dory Monson Show, live from the CenturyLink Event Center from noon till 2. And then Seahawks football pregame starts right at 2 o'clock, and we will take you right up to kickoff of Monday Night Football, my pregame show co-hosts and I, because you are listening to your home of the Seattle Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. And between now and then, enjoy some of our favorite segments, interviews, and moments from the last few weeks here on The Dory Monson Show. Glad you've been listening to these best of segments, favorite interviews, favorite show segments here on the Dory Monson Show. Hope you are having a fantastic Thanksgiving weekend. I hope that you are just surrounded by family and friends and food and love. And this is my favorite holiday still. Still not too commercialized. I know the Black Friday thing gets overdone, but Thanksgiving itself is still really cool and fun. So we're glad that you have us tuned in. We hope that you've enjoyed some of our favorite segments and interviews here on The Dory Monson Show. A few months ago, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg came on my show and said that he will no longer prosecute personal possession amounts of any drug here in King County. If somebody has heroin, meth, anything in small amounts, they will not get prosecuted. And there are other low-level crimes that the prosecutor's office has long said they do not have the resources to prosecute. And I want to get an update on all of this. So let me welcome to the show your King County prosecutor, Dan Satterberg. Dan, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Hi, Dory.
What kind of crimes are we talking about that are getting dismissed here?
Here's the thing. I have 28 deputy prosecutors in trials. We're doing 2 murder cases, 2 rape cases, 4 rape of child cases, 6 assault with firearms. We have robbery, car theft, burglary, felony domestic violence, and identity theft cases. So, you know, we are doing the most serious cases that come to us. These cases take a long time to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
The people that we're prosecuting are serious dangers to the community, and they're off to prison for a very long period of time.
Right.
I have the same number of prosecutors today that I had 10 years ago. I have not been able to grow my staff. In fact, the first couple of years that I was prosecutor, we lost 51 FTEs due to the Great Recession, and I haven't built them back up yet, despite the fact that we have 250,000 more people in our county than we did 10 years ago. So,
well, and that's something where I would certainly be an advocate for you getting more resources, because, you know, I see stories like, Ed Murray added 1,300 City of Seattle workers. King County has added 1,000 workers in the last couple of years. And the fact that you're not getting your share of these increases, that shows to me a disturbing lack of prioritization from the people who make these budget decisions.
Well, we're not funded to do all the work that comes to us, and so we do have to pick and choose the cases and our priorities. And I suspect that the choices that we make to do the serious violent crimes and the repeat chronic property offenders are the choices that most people would make given that. So,
okay.
You know, the cases that are being sent back are cases that that are the lowest level misdemeanors that come to us. And frankly, cases that do take a long time to resolve because the people tend to be not at a stable address, and so warrants are issued in those cases.
Yeah,
and
no,
I
get
to go
that.
Out and make arrests. So.
Yeah, well, and the reason we reached out to you a couple of days ago because I didn't know that announcement was coming out, but a few months ago you came on with me. You told me and my listeners that you're not going to prosecute personal possession amounts of any drug, heroin, meth, anything, and. You know, I told you at the time that just sounded like terrible policy, and now that we're several months into this, I wanted to talk about what has been my main on-air criticism, and that is I think that we have policies that are attracting drug vagrants from all around the country to King County, to the Puget Sound area, because the word is out that this is the easiest place to be a drug addict. You're not gonna be prosecuted if you're holding. And I wanted to hear from your perspective, because that's mine. I wanted to get your perspective on how this policy is working out.
So the possession of personal use amount that what we've talked about is under a gram, but most of the cases are 0.02 grams. That's $20 worth. So it might be a syringe full that a person hadn't been able to shoot up before they got stopped.
Right.
Those cases take about a year to resolve. Each case averaged 1.5 warrants on that case. So that means police have to spend half a shift to arrest and book somebody in on the warrant. At the end of a year, they would resolve with a guilty plea to a gross misdemeanor and no offer of help to anybody. We estimated it cost taxpayers about $3 million a year to process those cases, and for no purpose that satisfied public safety or that offered any help to people with drug addiction. So instead, we've taken the $3 million and we're expanding the LEAD program into Burien and White Center, and that will start next month. And the police there are excited to have that tool, because the tool that we have right now, which is jail, doesn't help people with the serious drug problems. But the LEAD program is a way to that where the police have the tool to call a case manager to begin to work with somebody who's often chronically mentally ill and drug addicted, maybe homeless as well.
And I have no problem with the LEAD program. No, I think the LEAD program makes a lot of sense. But what about my point that the word is out, and we have people, we've had several high-profile stories where women have been horribly raped by people who came here from Arizona, from Texas. We are attracting the worst drug dregs from around the country because of what our policies are here. This is the easiest place in the United States to be a drug addict, isn't it? From a prosecution standpoint.
Sex offenders, which we do prosecute, as I say, we've got two violent rapists on trial right now.
Right.
And they came. I don't think that they came here from another place. I think they are local people who grew up here who prey on people here. So I think it's wrong to say that people who have a drug addiction are violent rapists.
I didn't say that. No,
well,
no, but what I said is
because
that
of our drug policies.
Well, but
and then they rape people.
Well, I mean the woman who was attacked in the restroom at Golden Gardens when she was out on a training run. That guy came from Arizona. The woman who was brutally raped at a Ballard car dealership. That guy came from Texas. And I'm not saying all drug users are sex offenders, but I'm saying we are attracting a lot of people with our drug policies who happen to also be, horrible criminals in other ways.
Well, I don't know if that's true across the board. You've found a couple of stories, but the point is that we've got to make decisions about how we're going to use the scarce resources of the criminal justice system, and putting people in court and in jail for possessing tiny amounts of drugs is silly. It costs us a ton of money. It doesn't result in anybody getting any better, and it clogs the courts that we need to, for these violent crimes that we're prosecuting. So, you know, the sociological movement of people who have drug addictions, I think it certainly needs to be studied. I don't see the people who are chronically drug addicted as very mobile. Most of the people we see can barely get through the day because they're so focused on finding drugs today. Well, I'm not saying this doesn't have a huge impact on I mean, the drug addiction, the mental health crisis that is in our community is real. And the question is, what's the best tool to address that? And putting people into court, into misdemeanor court, and taking a year to resolve their cases and spending $3 million a year to do that, to me, doesn't make very much sense when we could take that money and try to alleviate some of the harm that people are doing, not only to themselves, but to the community that they live in.
Okay, but I still argue that we are on the wrong path. Tell you what, Dan, hold on. We are going to continue the conversation with Dan Satterberg. Are we on the best path to deal with what is a crisis in our region? My conversation with Dan Satterberg continues in just a moment here on the Dory Monson Show. What we're doing now is not working. And we're spending $100,000 per homeless person per year. And I could argue. I think we could spend $1 million per homeless person per year. But the fact of the matter is a lot of the homeless, they have made living on the streets their lifestyle of choice. They are offered services. I want those services. I want mental health counseling and drug addiction treatment for everybody who wants it. But the vast majority choose not to avail themselves of those services. They make living on the streets their lifestyle of choice. And no matter, I mean, I would rather spend money on prosecutors in prison than on what we're doing now, because what we're doing now just isn't working, it seems to me, Dan.
Well, we do need more prosecutors, and we will eventually face in our state the decision about building another prison because our prisons are 100% full. But I don't think that the answer to drug addiction is going to be found in a prison cell or in a courtroom. But there are people who, in addition to their drug use, in addition to their behavioral health issues, are also criminally oriented, and we prosecute them. I don't think people should have to put up with burglaries and car thefts and car prowls, and we do prosecute those cases. The simple possession of a tiny amount of drugs, to me, was, these are cases that come to us not because we're the best option, but because we're the only one that's been built. And we need to work on building a different response that police can have. I mean, that's the whole thing about the LEAD program. I'm glad to hear that you're a supporter.
I am.
This is a
I've looked into it deeply.
Decision.
Right.
Yeah, the police get to decide who gets this help and who doesn't. And they're in a perfect position to be able to do that because they've arrested a lot of these people numerous times. There's a lot of frustration and there's a lot of finger pointing and people saying, well, we just need to put more people in jail for longer. I'm not sure that that's the answer for everybody. It's the answer for some people, and we certainly do put a lot of people in jail and send a lot of people to prison for violent crimes. The question is, what do we do with the very lowest level crimes that are really where the root of the issue is a behavioral health, mental health
right.
issue.
Well, there are two issues here, and that's what's best for the individual. And like I said, I think a lot of them, sadly, have just made choices to make this their lifestyle. And what's best for our society, and it just seems like our region is on a wrong path. Let me play for you a soundbite real quick, and I won't take more of your time. But Cairo 7 talked to a street vagrant named Travis Burge, and I played this on my show yesterday.
There's nothing in my life that makes me functional, quite like meth.
I use dirty needles. I shoot up AIDS.
And he talked about looking for cops so he could shoot up right in front of them.
I go around and look for cops, and once I find cops, then I'll shoot up, and I'll be like, best friends.
So, I mean, is that true? People can shoot up right in front of a police officer with impunity here?
Police have the same authority to make arrests that they've always had. We've done nothing to change that, and they can make that arrest. I saw that guy, and he's clearly got a lot of issues.
Yeah.
He's a frequent, I'm certain, no doubt he's a frequent utilizer of the jail, of the courts, of the hospitals, of the emergency services. He is going to end up with some sort of horrific medical condition because of his indiscriminate use of the syringe And so he's going to end up costing the taxpayers of our community a lot of money, and he's created a lot of chaos on the streets, and people, I'm sure, go out of their way to walk around him. The question is, what's the best way to help him, to help the community, to do less harm, so he does less harm to people? I mean, I don't know if he's done something to put him in prison, but what he's doing by, you know, having a syringe and shooting up in front of a police officer is not the kind of thing that's going to send him to prison, that's going to get him off the streets. It is going to kill him eventually.
Well, I know the cops have the same discretion, but they're not going to arrest somebody if they know that you're not going to prosecute him. I mean, that's a total waste of police resources then.
Well, right now, the cases that with the minor possession of your daily amount of drugs, the police will make an arrest. They usually takes about 3 months for them to send us the case to have it filed. In the meantime, the person's been released from jail, and then after we file the case, you know, it's nobody's top priority. I told you where our priorities are.
I got you.
But after we file the case, then we got to go find that guy. And then we got to book him into jail and start all over again and pay for lawyers for him. And, you know, what he needs some significant psychiatric support, some other help. It's not going to be found in the jail. For a moment, it will make people feel better to arrest him and put him in jail, I suppose. But it's not a long-term solution for him.
Look, I know this is the biggest issue that our region is dealing with right now. I appreciate you always coming on with me and talking about it. And when you need a public advocate for increasing your staffing, you got one right here, because I think that our priorities at the budget-making level are pretty upside down right now.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hate to be the one to speak the truth to you, but we are not funded to do all the work that comes to us, and I'm not sure that the court and the prison is the way to resolve these essential, you know, these complicated social problems that are out on our street.
All right, Dan, I really do always appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Dory.
King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg joining us. I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. I gave you a lot of information there. And you've heard both sides, my perspective and the prosecutors. Let me know what you think. 98973 is the text line. Lots more straight ahead on the Dory Monson Show. Glad you've been listening to some of our favorite interviews and show segments from the last several weeks as we take a couple days off on this Thanksgiving weekend. But we wanted to put together some of our favorite moments for you to listen to, because we appreciate that you are tuning in, even though you're enjoying the Thanksgiving weekend, as are we. So thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for tuning us in. And we will continue with some of our favorite moments as this Best of the Dory Monson Show continues. He is one of the co-hosts on the top-rated morning news cable show, Fox and Friends. He's written a new book. He's also been right in the middle of all of the stuff that the nation is embroiled in right now. Let me welcome to the show, Brian Kilmeade joins us. Hey, Brian, welcome to the Dory Monson Show.
And thanks so much for having me on. It's a privilege to be on your station as well. I didn't know the nation was embroiled in stuff. Really?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Getting along so well.
I know. That's what I've heard through the grapevine, Brian. But maybe I'm the one who's out of touch.
You can't wait. You missed 10 minutes. I mean, for example, the president coming back going, yeah, maybe I'll testify. I went to the bathroom and came back, and I go, wait a second, what just happened?
Right,
so it's amazing the speed of these stories.
Here's what I'm curious if you have some of the same cognitive dissonance that I have. I had Trump in the studio with me for an hour several years ago, and I had him on the show with me a couple of years ago, and I've always found him to be nothing but charming. And I know that you guys had him on every Friday the years before he decided he was going to run. And it's interesting to have somebody that you personally find so charming, and then you hear that half the nation is just dripping with venom for the man.
Yeah. That's why when people say, he's an ego thing to be president, he sacrificed half the country to be president. He was the most liked in urban communities, more than even the people that didn't like the president were the rich people. They didn't think he was worthy to hang out with them. And the reason why he got elected president, because he's like all of us. And he's more blue collar than white collar. And he's more Queens than he is Manhattan. So, and he likes people. I mean, literally, he does not drink, does not do drugs, never did, but will go out, and he likes just meeting people and networking and trying to make a difference. And he's always talked about being president, but I think at times, it's, you know, I really could sense a few times where he is really angry about the way he's being treated, to the point where I think on some level he must be saying, is this worth it?
Well, and I know that you recognize and will call out the significant flaws in the man that bring a lot of that on himself.
A lot of this is self-inflicted wounds. And,
yeah.
And I bring up that tweet yesterday. I mean, Bill Clinton actually gave the president valuable advice on last Thursday. He said, work for the people, let your lawyers be lawyers. And man, would that be great? Is that, I'm following it. Every time people ask, I'm not really following it. This is a joke. It's not something that concerns me. I have lawyers to handle that. They'll answer all those questions. And it just shut that fire hose of information that he usually gives that fertilizes this anti-Trump talk and this impeachment talk.
Yeah.
Let Nancy Pelosi look petty and unhinged Sunday. Let Adam Schiff act like a pastor on Saturday, pledging to be more than the resistance. I mean, that's the guy that's supposed to preside over solemn hearings, prayerful hearings. He's talking about how he's going to send the president back to his golden throne.
Yeah.
I mean, the president just should bow out of this. And those tweets on Friday that made the ambassador seem sympathetic, I thought were counterproductive.
So give me your read on these impeachment hearings, because I was against the impeachment of Bill Clinton, even though I think his transgressions were far more severe than anything I'm seeing that Trump has allegedly done. But I didn't think any of Clinton's stuff rose to high crimes and misdemeanors, and I thought that was just tearing apart the country. Where do you think we are with these impeachment hearings, and where is it going to go?
They're going to look for somehow the president directly related to his own personal political fortunes and using the foreign policy to do it. It doesn't exist. I don't have never heard both sides of a cell phone conversation like that worker did that worked for the ambassador in the Ukraine. He heard the president talk to another ambassador clearly, and he was directly involved in the asking for an investigation. Number two, I think this is a reason not to vote for him. It's not a reason to impeach him. If you don't like the way he handled Ukraine, do an oversight, have a committee meeting, come out with some, have a press conference after. This is not impeachment worthy. I mean, it's like jailing somebody for life for shoplifting and you can't prove the shoplifting. So I don't see it. They're going to have seven people come up and MSNBC is going to be sure that six of them indicted the president. And if the president can control his responses, this thing will peter out and will just turn on party lines. And I think it'll happen before Christmas. And it'll further divide the country until after the election. But he's not going anywhere.
We're talking with Fox & Friends co-host Brian Kilmeade. And so you got, like you just said, Brian, we're going to have a referendum on Donald Trump in 50 weeks. And to do something that is so divisive, it does speak to me to just the desperation that the Dems, they don't think they have anybody who can beat them right now. And this is their Hail Mary in an attempt to damage the guy.
Yeah, good luck, Mayor Pete of South Bend, who's done a subpar job in a city that is struggling worse now than it ever was. That's what we want as a national vision. Is it Elizabeth Warren, deeply unpopular in her own party, Joe Biden, who lost his fastball in 1986? So, I mean, thank you. Devel Patrick, please tell me how you get momentum. Or are you there to make sure Joe Biden is not present? So by taking the black vote away from him. So who are you left with? Michael Bloomberg, who just apologized for one of the most productive policies he's had to stop and frisk that kept minority communities safer than any other single program that now he just apologized for. So, I mean, I'm embarrassed by what's happening on the left. Bernie Sanders just pledged to give illegal immigrants free health care. I mean, how many people want to drive off the road listening to that right now? You know what health care plan you have and how much you're paying. And now people who come here illegally now get free health care under Bernie Sanders, who's a solid third in all the polls. That's what America has to look forward to. Please.
And I mean, every one of the candidates raised their hand on health care for illegals. So what about Hillary? You didn't mention Hillary. It's you were running down the roster there.
I don't think she gets in. I don't see it. But I think she has just handled these last 2.5 years as poorly as anybody. There's some glory in knowing how to lose. Al Gore showed you that. John McCain showed you that. And I just think in life, if I can look big picture for a second, in life you lose how you act is so valuable. We forgot how to lose in this country. And she is the latest example. And I'm embarrassed for her. And her supporters don't stop her. If she had a true friend, they would start heading some of this stuff off and say, listen, you're coming off very petty and detached from reality. But she, if she says she's considering running, people are considering her running. Nobody's asking her to run, believe me.
It's your best guess right now. Trump versus who and who wins?
No guess. I would say Elizabeth Warren still if it was to be today. She's got the best organization. But ultimately, she will fail miserably. I cannot see Joe Biden withstanding it. I guess the bigger debates, if you don't like Joe Biden in these big debates, when he gets to the small debates, you are basically you'd be looking for the mercy rule by the end of it.
Yeah, it's not.
You can't finish in two sentences.
It's not going to be Biden. I don't think there's any question about that. Hey, you got a new book out, and it would seem in these times, Brian, all you have to do is write a book about how much you hate Trump or how much you love Trump.
I know.
And it automatically is going to shoot to the top of the bestseller list. You're writing about Sam Houston and the Alamo. Why is that?
Couple of things. It's number three, so America does care about history. And I will say this. I have very little interest. I got sports, news, and history. And I have very few hobbies. I don't have any time to play golf, nor does anyone want me to. Now, I don't play soccer anymore. So basically what I do is I study this stuff, and I try to find one story that I think helps personify America. I had no idea when I did this that I'd be fighting for America's history. I thought I'd be just trying to tell people a good story about our past. But now we have the self-esteem issue. We're apologizing for everything and in our past. And I feel the exact opposite. And I don't think for a second they were perfect. But the Sam Houston Alamo story is a story of a bunch of Americans who go to Texas to go by the 1824 Constitution of Mexico. And it gets abrogated. They try to take away all the rights. And the due process, the freedoms, put their own people in place, and what Texans do, what Texans do, what Americans do, what Americans do. 60 years after the Revolution, they stood up to fight another standing army, and outnumbered, they suffer some major losses, but no one really understands outside Texas the San Jacinto victory that General McChrystal brought me through on the special on Sunday night, one of the most miraculous military victories in modern military history taught in war colleges. So I brought General McChrystal out to the Alamo. He reconfigured it on a telestrator, on an iPad, telestrator, the old-fashioned word, and we talked about how unbelievable our guys fought and how many they killed in order to set themselves up, Sam Houston, up for the ultimate victory. So I just think it's a story Americans have to know, and the Texans are kind enough to share it. They said, listen, go tell this story. So I went to Texas. I've already been there 4 times since the book came out, and they seem to really embrace it. So the other 49 states, class is now in because these were Americans that fought. It was the Texas victory that changed American history. Without it, we don't have the South or the West.
Yeah. About 10 years ago, my wife and I, we live here in Seattle, we just randomly picked San Antonio for a family vacation, took our 3 daughters down there, and being there really opens your eyes. In the moments we have left, is there anything translatable about that? Do you think that there's anybody who would show that kind of fight today, or does everybody just do their fights with a hashtag attached to it?
This is what I say. I would never compare myself to people of those years, nor would I want to go back there. I like roads and bridges and planes and cars. But just picture this. The mindset of people that came here didn't come here for the social safety net. They didn't come here to protest. They came here for the opportunity to be successful and reach happiness, however you define it. They were given a rake, an axe, and a gun, and they were told, go clear that land, and how much does it cost, and what will it take? And a community helped each other. For the most part, we depended on ourselves and our families, and we loved it. And it was hard with those bankruptcies, and we understand the tribulations of natural disasters, but we came here with an attitude. The best of the best left their countries and came here. They didn't come here to get baby bucks and $1,000 because of automation and free health care. And that's the mindset. Don't come here looking to live off the country. Look to add to the country. We need more of that mindset. to people that would pick up, follow me, get on the wagons, and go down there for the promise of what Texas offered. And what they wanted a new world after the new world. And that's the mindset we got to get back to. And as I watch these debates and prepare to cover them on my radio and TV shows, I just go, wow, what happened to this mindset? And I just hope we rediscover it.
Yeah, you and me both, from your lips to God's ears. All right, Brian Kilmeade, you can see him every morning, 3 to 6 a.m. Seattle time on Fox and Friends. The book is Sam Houston and the Alamo Avengers. Brian, I really enjoyed talking with you. Thanks for coming on with me this afternoon.
Yeah, I appreciate the great questions, Don. Continue success.
Thank you.
Success story.
Appreciate it. Okay. All right. And as always, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Glad you are with us on this Thanksgiving weekend. Nicole and I are taking a couple of days off here, as are many of you. So I imagine that some people who work during the days are tuned into our show on Thanksgiving Day. Maybe you're getting ready for your family meal on Friday. Maybe you're sitting in long lines, getting to the mall. Does anybody go to the mall anymore on Black Friday? I had a program director when I first started out, and he wanted me to work the day after Thanksgiving because it was his theory that was one of the most important days of the year to expose me and my radio show to potential new listeners. Because on Black Friday, you know, we're talking 25 years ago almost, but there would be long lines of people in the afternoons who would be sitting, you know, there'd be a line off the freeway exits to get to Northgate and South Center and Alderwood, and you had people in their cars. And he said, this is a great day to expose you and your radio show to people who might not ordinarily listen to you. Now, this was back before we had podcasts. It was back when we were still trying to make a mark, as opposed to now, when we're firmly entrenched as a beloved Seattle radio institution. Okay, I don't know about the beloved part. Seattle radio institution? At least I know that part is true. But now, you know, we're resting on our laurels and not working the day after Thanksgiving. I guess that's okay. But we still care about the quality of the show. So we've put together some of our favorite segments from the last couple of months for you to enjoy, interviews that we've done. And then again, this reminder that so many of our best segments, because we love all the exclusive stories that we bring you here on the Dory Monson Show, and so many of our exclusives come on tips from listeners, and we follow up so many of them, and it's allowed us to break as many stories as, you know, any radio show in the country. And for that, I have you to thank, because you give us fresh material all the time. And here's the other thing. There's a bunch of us, you and me, the listeners to this show, who feel like we're in this fight together against a region that has become increasingly out of touch with us and our values. And, you know, we have each other. And I appreciate that very much. Because when I talk to folks who listen to this show, and I realize that just the madness that has engulfed so much of the politics, and not just politics, but the judicial process in our region, you know, the revolving door where we're just letting really violent people back out on the streets. We have each other to try to fight all of that. So, anyway, glad you're listening to us on this Thanksgiving weekend. Sit back and enjoy some of our favorite segments and interviews from the last couple of months here on the Dory Monson.